You voted against the $700 billion bailout bill for the financial industry, and I guess my key question would be, what would you have done instead if you had the choice or you had, could make the decision for Congress, what would you prefer that they had done instead?
Well, I don't think Congress can solve this problem. We're one of the problems. We created it. We created it when Bill Clinton deregulated the lending institutions, and people were lending money. The concept that everybody could own a house regardless of what their income was or what they were able to pay was very frankly a great dream, but it doesn't work that way, especially when we had an energy crisis. And so I'm not sure Congress could have solved the problem. You know, and I'm watching this very, with a great interest. You know, I voted no, it passed, so everybody should be relatively happy that thinks it will work. But you know, the stock took a 900-point dip the day after we passed it. And now it's back up today. I think it didn't go up, maybe it's 104 above or something like that. But it's a sort of like a yo-yo effect. And I really strongly believe that the public will balance this out in time without any interference from the government. My big objection to getting in this, now you own part of the banks. You.
Right, they just injected the money into the equity.
And you own part of it because you're a taxpayer, but you had no say in how the banks to be run. I don't think that's really the way we should be doing business. When you get government involved in it, you're as I said before, you're on the slippery slope to socialism, and that bothers me. The one thing positive out of this was and I see now they could have done this with regulation. They've insured bank deposits up to $200,000. It was $100,000. And under the bill, it was only for 1 year, but now I understand that they've done this through a regulation through the banking group or whatever it is. It's guaranteed for $200,000, which is really very fair. That keeps a run on the banks from occurring, and because people say, well, my money's safe, and I leave it there.
In voting against the bailout, you basically had to vote against a segment that I know that you supported in the bill, which was the Secure Rural Schools funding. How do you come to a decision like that?
It's very difficult because I worked very hard. But if the bill was bad for the reasons I voted against it, the government involvement in it, if the bill was bad because, you've given all that authority to one person to spend that kind of money without any oversight, if the bill was bad, it's a $700 billion added debt to our already big debt instead of reducing it 7%. Then because they added two very special things to me, and I've been a leader in, it's sort of like buying your vote, and I don't like that. And so I made that decision. And, of course, now you're still going to get your money because it passed. But I just think to do that when those bills should have stood on their own, there was the right thing to do. The rural schools have been fought for by, Weldon out of Oregon, myself, Peter DeFazio. We had this issue solved anyway if the Senate would act correctly. But they added to it on the Senate side and trying to take and get votes.
I wanted to ask about the North Pacific Fishery Management Council actions recently. I imagine you've been following that to a certain extent. What are your thoughts on the decision to incorporate the charter industry into a catch-sharing plan with a commercial fleet in an effort to limit the charter catch?
Well, this is a hot issue, and it's outside my realm. You're trying to get me into a battle between a man and a wife, or between the mother-in-law and the son-in-law, or sister-in-law and a brother-in-law, and that's not good.
Just don't say who's who, right?
Well, yeah, but no, it's just an issue that there has to be a working. I've talked with both sides. I'm very supportive of what the chartered operators have done, but they also have to recognize they have a responsibility. On the commercial side, they've taken biggest hits percentage-wise as far as not catching the fish that they should catch. And that's, there's got to be a working relationship. And I've suggested before they ought to get together, and the council, I think, basically is talking about that part of the quota and can be used for charter. I don't know the whole ins and outs of it. But if the constant fighting amongst themselves, nobody wins. And eventually someone will make that decision for them, and no one's going to be happy. And what I understand now is that if the charter operators aren't real happy, and neither the commercial guys are real happy. So they're making progress as they're working together. That's the best way to solve this problem.
one local issue that's been ongoing for several years now, and I'm pretty sure you're familiar with it, is a large group of homeowners on Mitkoff Highway out the road here have been worried for a long time about the future of the steep lands above their home, worried about the possibility that the Alaska Mental Health Trust would end up logging that land. They're concerned over landslides. The thing that has been looked at now is the possibility of a land swap between the U.S. Forest Service and the Alaska Mental Health Trust, and the possibility of exchanging some timberlands for that land. Do you support that idea? Well, and would you
again? Now you're getting between mother and father-in-law. You know,
well, it could be a congressional action.
No, it cannot be
a land swap.
Yes, but listen to me. What I have to say, it's up to the mental health. If the mental health makes that proposal, then I'd be for it.
See,
but I'm not going to go to the mental health and say you've got to do this, and that's not realistic. You know, the mental health wants to do this, I'd be all for it. I mean, it's the right idea. And by the way, I think that mental health land was chosen, I'm not sure, before or after the houses were built there. That's another thing you have to look at. If it was chosen after the houses were built, then definitely there is a definite need for it. If it was chosen before, then the house owners themselves should have been recognizing that potential problem. Now, the problem is, of course, if they log it, because the mental health is in the business, that's what it's for, is to generate dollars for the mental health treatment of Alaskans. And but if they come to me with a swap, I'd support in a heartbeat. I'm trying to help people that want to help themselves, but I'm not going to instigate that at all.
You've supported a couple of bills that would open more Tongass lands for potential logging, one that would turn 2 million acres federal land over to the state, another that would turn land over to Sea Alaska as part of the settlement for the corporation's land claims under Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Do you have a preference for either of those bills in terms of opening up lands for development, and do you believe that there's actually a chance they'll go through in the Congress?
There's two different bills, and I support them both. I sponsored both of them. One is that, remember, the Tongass lands were not to be selected because they're reserved at the time of the statehood. My argument is that was inappropriate at that time, and when we've had 27 million acres taken away from us, that we had a right to select outside of the Tongass area. I argue for the benefit of the schools and for the communities in Southeast, select 2 million acres of land and put it up for an economic base for a logging industry. And then you're able to pay for the schools and you're able to pay for the community activities and you keep a strong community center for the Southeast Alaska area. You don't do that. You don't have a whole lot here. The fishing is not what it used to be. Tourism is not what it's going to be or what it was. And so I think this is a good bill. On Sea Alaska, their primary lands that they're selecting are already logged lands, but they have potential for logging in the future. And I think this is a great idea, and I'm going to work for it. They have a right to these lands. To me, not to support that, although some communities say they don't want to support it. I noticed that Lisa Murkowski's introduced the bill exactly like mine. I heard my opponent the other day say, well, I would support one, but not Young's bill. I would support Lisa's bill. Her bill's exactly like mine. To me, it gives future capability of having a timber industry, although small, in Southeast Alaska. Between the two of them, we'd be able to maintain probably two small sawmills, maybe three, in Southeast, employing probably 200 to 300 people over a period of time. To me, that's part of the economic basis for Southeast Alaska.
If Senator McCain's elected to the presidency, you know, he's vowed to rein in earmark spending. It's obviously been a very important thing to Alaska over the years. How are you going to work on that issue to bringing funds to Alaska?
This is all political rhetoric. John McCain isn't going to veto. If he vetoes, we beat him. It's that simple. This is a prerogative of the Congress, and I've never understood why everybody jumped on this bandwagon. If you read the Constitution, only the Congress can raise money and spend money, not the President of the United States. And what he'd like to do is have only and total authority within the executive branch to have earmarks. And that's not going to happen. I can just about guarantee you under whoever is in the majority in the House. And I know the Democrats are definitely not going to have any hesitation about putting earmarks in. And I'm not going to, because every one of those earmarks have been asked for by communities. Everyone has come. I know I put $17 million into Petersburg in the last 10 years, all earmarks, and asked for by the city of Petersburg. I can go to Ketchikan, Sitka, Juneau. They're all been requested by those communities because the state hasn't done the job they should have done. And so I'm very confident we'll be able to get it, continue to get our earmarks as we've done in the past, and I'm going to continue to work regardless who's elected for president.
Are you willing to comment at all on the investigation going on right now at all?
No. I can't.
Okay. There's
really, you figure it out yourself, it's 22 months. Duh.
Well, what would you say is your top priority if you're reelected to?
Well, top priority is to speak for the people. And I say that because you never know. There's no big promises. You know, I learned one lesson a long time ago. I promised a post office in Tutuliac up north, northwest, when I first got elected. It took me 10 years to get that post office. Be careful what you promise. And most politicians promise everything. If you listen to the presidential lecture and even my opponent, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. That's nonsense. You have a policy of speaking for the people and the people in the state of Alaska and what they want to be done in the Congress. Now, I have responsibilities. I'm a big defender of the timber industry, big defender of the fishing industry, big defender of mining industry, big defender of the Coast Guard, and et cetera, down the line. And I have to continue to do that every year, including introducing legislation. But I'm not going to tell you I'm going to build a new ferry system in southeast Alaska, although I do support that system and put federal dollars into it to make sure it works. And so, but my priority is if there is a problem by a constituent or a community, then my job is to speak for them in Congress and get that problem solved, and I'm very good at that. As far as legislation, I'm working on Leave No Child Behind, have heavy support for that. Of course, again, I go back to the Coast Guard. The fishing is always a constant cauldron of interest and disputes. I've got to take and level that out, make sure it works. And I can just, you know, on and on and on. But anybody says, I'm going to do this, I'm going to develop all the energy. The state has a responsibility to develop energy in this state. On a national level, I believe our energy policy is terrible, but I've got a good energy bill. And Nancy Pelosi won't let us vote on it. I have the votes to pass it, but she says, no, we're not going to burn any more fossil fuels. So I have to fight that battle. I mean, it's going to be a battle I'll continue to do.
Do you think the state should be dipping more into, because of the economic situation on the federal level, do you think the state should be dipping more into its permanent fund?
No, see, you don't understand. You're too young to understand. You don't dip into it. You use it as collateral. You never use your own money unless you have to. You put it up. This is collateral, and you go out and bond with that as collateral. And that's easy to do. And that's what we should be doing. And we should be looking at all forms of energy. Instead of giving everybody $1,200 as a energy thing and solve nothing.
Oh, the governor's...
It solved nothing. And what we should have done is like John Harris wanted to do, and unfortunately he's not going to be speaker anymore. He's not running anymore. Is in fact, we ought to have got... He had a $21 billion energy program to develop energy. And that's what we should do. We have no hydro in the southeast as we should be developed. We have the three-dam pool. I guess it's a two-dam pool now. Ta'i project.
We're working on it, yeah.
Yeah, a Ta'i project. We have more potential, but every small community in this state ought to have a hydro site. You have, I believe, Rose Lake you're working here on in this area. I think it's Rose Lake. And
are you thinking of Ruth Lake?
Ruth Lake. Ruth starts with an R in Thomas Bay. Let's do it. If you can't afford to do it now, let the state build it, and you pay them back over a period of 30 years.
And so the idea is the state would could use its savings for leverage to borrow money.
That's right.
Or to bond.
You bond the money, and then you pay the bonds off. But they guarantee the bond.
With the
permanent fund. It doesn't affect the permanent dividend check. I'm not dipping into it, but I'm using it as a collateral, and consequently, Petersburg would have power from that area, and it's hard for you to raise that capital, the small communities you have, and your tax base is low, and you don't have the timber industry you had. So the state can do it, but you pay it over 30 or 40 years, whatever it takes, and they advertise it out. You can do that all around the state, not just with hydro. You've got geothermal, you've got tidal, you've got wave, you've got all kinds of things.